You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Cedar.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
If I get the feeling you've been cheated...
It is Tuesday, September 4th, 2012. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Oh, my God, September already. Labor Day in our rearview mirror. The Democratic National Convention gaveled in yesterday, really starting today. As such, on the program today, Ari Berman from The Nation magazine, Rolling Stone, other places, live from Charlotte. Tina Dupuy, editor-in-chief of The Communicator, the contributor, excuse me. In Charlotte. And also John Neffel from Radio Dispatch in Charlotte, I think outside the convention, to give us a report on the protests that are taking place there. Yes, folks, we are chock-a-block. I spent the weekend with my family. My cold almost gone. Almost totally gone. But the massive ear infection that seemed to be coming, that seems to be gone. So good news there. On the program today, obviously, we'll be talking about the convention. We'll also talk about just a little reminder where we are with that financial fraud task force that Eric Schneiderman joined. Oh, wow. More than 6 months ago now, I think it was. In taking that big mortgage deal, we will update you on the progress. Oh, I can do that now. None. But we do see that, just coincidentally, Eric Schneiderman is leading an investigation into the tax practices of some corporations that seem to be playing loose and fast with tax laws. One of those corporations. Well, who do you think it would be? Well, of course, it's Bain.
Surprise, surprise.
Also, Grand Bargain Watch, the Koch brothers, who, you know, for all intents and purposes, maybe have the biggest seat at the table when it comes time for the Grand Bargain. They've got $400 million invested in the Republican Party, at least, over the course of this campaign in the future. They're okay with some tax increases, huh? Well, of course, if we cut some other things, we'll talk about that on the program today as well. And buried on, I think it was Thursday or Friday, CIA, you know that whole we tortured some people until they died thing? Don't worry about it. That's just, don't worry about it. We'll put it on your check. Put it on your bill. Check's in the mail. All right, we've got to take a break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Ari Berman. And then, of course, Tina Dupuy. And then, of course, John Neffel. We're jam-packed today. We'll be right back after this.
Look through the window.
are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report on the phone. If he's ready, I mean, because he's in the middle of a tweet, and I don't want to interrupt him while he's tweeting.
Sam.
Ari Berman.
I'm tweeting you, Sam. Sam, I'm tweeting you, okay?
Okay, hold on for a second. We better see if we can get more bandwidth, because I don't want your tweet to crash our system. Ari, where are you right now?
I am in DFA headquarters in Charlotte, North Carolina.
And the convention has yet to start, correct?
The convention starts tonight, yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, before we go, I mean, let's ease into the convention, because the reason why I wanted you to start this, because I mean, the convention hasn't started, and I want to get your sense of sort of what people are expecting going into this. But before we get there, you had a great piece out today entitled "The Confederacy Rises Again About Voter Suppression." Now, there's some good news on the voter suppression front coming from last week, but there's also some sort of like hidden bad news. Tell us the good news in terms of the cases around the country.
Well, the good news is in the last week alone, restrictive voting laws were blocked twice in Texas, twice in Ohio, and once in Florida. And so a federal court rejected Texas's voter ID law and its redistricting law as being discriminatory by preventing minority voters and low-income voters from enjoying political representation, and also for making it harder for them to vote. In Ohio, a judge restored 3 days of early voting before the election, and also made it so that if you accidentally voted in the wrong precinct, your ballot would still be counted. And then in Florida, a judge overturned a restriction on voter registration drives, which has been very, very severe and prevented groups like the League of Women Voters from registering voters like they've been doing for 70 years in the state. So that was the good news of voting rights. And it followed a series of earlier cases that have really pushed back on the GOP's efforts to suppress the vote. A big exception to that being Pennsylvania, which I know we've also talked about, where a Republican judge let that law stand, which I think was, especially after last week, a particularly bad decision. Now, the disturbing thing here is that you look at the South, the old Confederacy, obviously a place with a very, very dark and long history of voter suppression. I found that 8 of 11 states in the Confederacy have passed laws restricting the right to vote since the 2010 election. And it's just really disturbing that, of all places, the South would once again be leading the effort to make it harder for people to be able to vote.
I'm sure that's just a coincidence.
Well, yeah, and sure, you know, I wrote about this. I'm sure it's just a coincidence. Yeah, and I wrote about this on the first day of the convention, because the South, like the rest of the country, is becoming increasingly diverse. And I think that's the backstory to this Democratic convention. That's the backstory to doing it in a place like Charlotte, where Charlotte is a city that is very diverse between whites, African Americans, Hispanics, Asian Americans, and there's been an effort to push back against those demographic trends.
Let me quote your piece, if I can. In North Carolina, people of color accounted for 61%. Of the 1.5 million new residents the state has gained over the past decade. And this is interesting, too. Among baby boomers aged 55 to 64, the South is 72% white. Among kids 15 or under, the South is 51% white. That's a huge, huge shift.
It's a huge shift, and you know, this is the context for all of the new voting restrictions, is that the country is becoming a lot younger and a lot more diverse, including in large parts of the South, in states like Florida, North Carolina, and Virginia, important swing states in 2012. And Republicans have responded to these demographic changes not by courting the growing minority vote, but to try to undercut their political representation through redistricting and try to make it harder for them to vote through all these new voting restrictions. And North Carolina is one of the states where this hasn't happened, because Republicans in the legislature twice tried to pass a strict voter ID law. It was vetoed by the Democratic governor. North Carolina has a close governor's race if the Republican, who is the former mayor of Charlotte, wins that race, he's almost certainly going to sign a very strict voter ID law on his first months in office, which are going to make it harder for that growing minority political constituency and those younger voters in a state like North Carolina to be able to enjoy the same level of political representation going forward.
The part about your piece that I think most people just are not conscious of, and this rarely gets covered, and it's such a state-by-state thing in some respects, is the redistricting. This is, I think, like people are just not sort of on top of this, and there's no national remedy for this, really, as far as I can tell, unless like the Department of Justice gets in. And it's a state-by-state thing, and it's a fairly subtle dynamic. Explain this part about the redistricting and how that implicates not so much like a national election, like a presidential election, but it certainly, and maybe not even a statewide, but it certainly does in terms of like Congress.
No, and I wrote a story about this, a longer story about this for The Nation earlier this year called How the GOP is Resegregating the South. And redistricting is really, really important because the maps help determine who's elected to the state legislature and who's elected to Congress. And Republicans since 2010 have used redistricting very effectively to shore up vulnerable incumbents who would otherwise be targeted and in many cases would lose, but they've shorn them up by creating more Republican districts. And what they've done in the South, which I think has really ugly racial overtones, is they've put as many Democrats in as possible into as few heavily minority districts as possible to try to maximize Republican gains everywhere else. So they're resegregating the South politically at the very moment that the South is becoming more diverse demographically. And I think that's, in 2012, a really disturbing development.
And it has overtones, undertones. I mean, it's through and through tones, yeah, of racial animus. Well, I guess maybe not so much racial animus as much as like we're just going to try and disenfranchise these the vote. That's basically it. And it's an untold story. I'm curious, do you think that I know you went to a conference, based upon what you wrote there, you went to a conference on this in Charlotte, I guess it was on Sunday or Monday. Do you think there's like a sensitivity to this at the convention, or is anybody on this beat aside from you?
I mean, it's just, I feel like there's 15,000 political reporters at the convention, and they're all they seem to care about is, number one, getting into parties, and number two, what the candidates are going to say. And that's not the story as far as I'm concerned. I mean, I think the story is the effort to really reshape the electorate by conservatives to, number one, buy the election, and number one, shape the electorate to their favor, which have been done in concert through super PACs on the money front and through state legislatures and by Republican governors on the voting front. And I think how Democrats respond to these efforts, to me, is really what's going to determine not just the 2012 election, but the type of politics we have going forward and the ability to create progressive change in this country, because I just don't see how we can create progressive change in this country if elections are bought by the highest bidder and a lot of people who otherwise would be eligible to vote are not eligible to vote, particularly historically disenfranchised communities that fought so hard to get the right to vote. So to me, that's kind of the undercurrent that I'm interested in trying to learn more about this week in Charlotte. Otherwise, I don't think there's a whole lot of point in going to the convention. You could just sit back and watch it on C-SPAN, which I'm sure you're going to be doing, Sam.
Indeed.
From the hours of 5 to midnight every night.
That's exactly my plan to cover it. I mean, it's, to sort of see and absorb it as it's being absorbed. But I guess what I'm also curious is, aside from, of course, the reporters down there not being keyed into that, and of course get the parties. I mean, it's like, you know, it's like any other convention. It's, you know, it's you do 15 minutes worth of work and then you party the whole time. And I know that you don't get invited to parties, Ari, and it's understandable. But have you found any? Are the Democrats or activists? I mean, is there?
If anyone's listening to this and they have an extra invite, you know, I'll take it.
Right, we will be the conduit to get you into parties. But is there any? Are there any activists? Are there any institutional Democrats? Are the Democrats doing anything to deal with this issue?
Well, they have done a lot in recent months to deal with this issue. I mean, first, the Justice Department's been aggressive in challenging laws in places like Florida,
right,
and South Carolina and Texas, where they have jurisdiction under Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act. The Justice Department is not all-powerful. Only 16 states and parts of states have to get approval for voting changes from the federal government. So in those states that don't have that burden, like Pennsylvania, there's a limited amount of things that people can do. There's been a lot more talk about voting rights. It seems to me that there's more of an effort to get people registered, to get people IDs in those states that now have these strict voter ID laws. In Pennsylvania, there's a lot of interest pouring in. It's just the problem is it's pouring in 2 months before the election.
Right.
So it's kind of unclear whether there can be such a successful organizing effort in such a short span of time. And that's another thing that I'm going to observe this week is how much is the Obama campaign doing on the ground to try to push back against these efforts. The other thing that I'm interested in is what is going on with the enthusiasm gap? I mean, why does it still exist? I understand that people are disappointed for one reason or another with Obama. I understand a lot of people have been hit hard by the economy. Those two reasons could prevent you from being as active. But the stakes to me in this election are so incredibly high. When you look at the future of the Supreme Court, you look at what could happen following a Romney victory and a one-party government, if indeed that's the case, where Republicans take back on the Senate, which I think is fairly likely. That's very, very stark, in some ways more stark than what even existed during the Bush administration, given where we're at politically right now. And so
you've answered your own question. Because
which is what?
Because when you talk about the importance of this election, it is all from a defensive perspective. I agree with everything you're saying. But the reason why there's an enthusiasm gap is because, for the same reason why, like, I'm not even sure how to cover this. You know, I'm going to watch these speeches tonight, and really, it's the thing that's going to motivate me is if somebody comes up and does a dossier on Ryan and on Romney.
But I mean, I think defense is really important. I mean, I think it's as important as offense. I mean, preventing judges from getting on the court who would overturn Roe v. Wade, who would overturn the Voting Rights Act. I mean, that's critically important.
I agree. Listen, I agree with you. Frankly, I'm also feel like if Obama's reelected, we're also going to be playing defense too in terms of Medicare and Social Security. It may be a more nuanced game in some respects. It won't be as blunt. I agree with what you're saying, but it is still that much harder to motivate people to, particularly liberals, to fight against something. You know, conservatives, for them, it's always a Masada movement, moment. Here come the gays, here come the Muslims, here come the whoever it is to take away our lifestyle. I think, liberals, I think just my sense is, or left-leaning people, tend to need something, some type of a positive thing to be excited about. And that's going to be the big challenge, I think, is that, is there something that Obama can present that will get a sort of like a positive response? I mean, it's like, you're down there in a right to work state. It's not obviously it's going to be very hard to promote the unionism. If it's, if the Democrats are lucky enough to get rain, they won't have to maintain their plan to hold the Obama speech in the Bank of America convention hall or, a stadium. I mean, this is part of the problem.
Well, I mean, there's two different ways to look at it. I mean, one way to look at it is that he's holding the convention in a state that has the lowest union representation in the country and that is very much, at least in Charlotte, dominated by the banking industry. The flip side is that he's holding it in North Carolina, a state that was not remotely competitive for a very long time, that he had probably flipped in 2008, and that is once again competitive, that is growing, at least if you look at the demographics of the state, more progressive. As I said earlier, becoming younger, becoming more diverse.
Take a step back. All right, take a step to your left or your right. Your phone got a little hinky on us.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, that's better. Yeah, I know. I get your point.
Can you hear me?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
What I was saying is that I think there's sort of two ways to look at the possibilities of having a convention in a state like North Carolina. And there's some good and there's some bad about it. But I think it's interesting that these parts of the South that were just written off as Republican for a very long time are now becoming competitive again.
Well, yeah, I agree with you. But I mean, if it means at the cost of giving up a support for labor, that may, you know, I mean, that's the dilemma, isn't it? I mean, if you're,
well, I don't necessarily think they're, I just think it's hard to fight that. So I wrote a story about Obama's organizing efforts in North Carolina, for the nation last month. And one of the things I wrote about was how Working America, which is a community affiliate of the AFL-CIO, that signs up, non-union members to lobby on behalf of them to support union rights, but they have just started organizing in North Carolina for the first time this year. And so it's baby steps, right, Sam? It's not suddenly going to become the state with the highest union density in the country, but I think, you know, those kind of organizing efforts that didn't really exist in the past are starting to happen in the state.
All right. Well, I mean, I guess that's good in that respect, in that it may be pushing North Carolina towards a more labor organization, but it sends a sort of a funky message, it seems to me, nationally. But hopefully it'll rain, and the Bank of America thing, I guess they're calling it Panther Stadium instead of Bank of America Stadium, but hopefully it'll rain and they'll have to move inside, and so we can save ourselves that embarrassment.
Yeah, I really hope that it's just as hot as possible and it rains as much as possible while I'm down here. I appreciate your weather forecasting, Sam.
Well, look, it's going to make it that much harder for all of those guys to go to those parties, right? So there's not going to be any outdoor parties. It's going to put a crimp on the party schedule. And I know you're for that, Ari, because I know you're.
We're all just going to stay home. We're all just going to stay home and tweet at you instead.
All right, I love it. So Ari Berman, ladies and gentlemen, you can follow him, of course, at Ari Berman on Twitter. You going to give us regular updates?
Absolutely.
What's the best party? You. What's the best party you think you're going to go to?
Well, I don't know. There's a few different parties tonight. Everyone's talking about this BuzzFeed party. So we'll see how that is. You kind of take what you can get at these things.
No, I understand. I mean, that's part of the reason why I couldn't go. It's just because, like, I get invited to so many.
Because you
parties.
Wouldn't get invited.
No, because I get invited to so many.
Oh, yeah, you're so popular.
I'm not going to.
Yeah, you'd be so overextended.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. It's hard being as popular as you are. So.
Right, and then you have to start making excuses to people, like to Ariana, I'm sorry I didn't make it to your party, or to, one of the.
Oh, yeah, that's right after I talk to you, I'm going to go get a massage at the Huffington Post Oasis.
All right, great. Get a good oxygen shot there, I think they have there, too.
I do. I need some after talking to you, especially.
I understand. Ari Berman, folks, thanks so much for joining us, Ari.
Thanks for having me, Sam. Talk to you later.
Talk to you Bye. Later. All right, folks, we're going to hang up with Ari Berman. We're going to go into a break, and when we come back, we're going to be talking to Tina Dupuy and see what her perspective on all this is. We'll be right back after this. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. The editor-in-chief of the contributor.com, Tina Dupuy. No R.
Hi, Sam.
Hi.
No R.
Hi, Tina. How are you?
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, so another week, another big conference.
You go from Tampa to Charlotte. What did you do? Now, you could probably just like sort of like mosey on there. What did you do? Spend Labor Day weekend in Georgia or something, or south of the border? Did you go to that south of the border, get some fireworks?
Yeah, that's pretty much exactly what we did. We just started driving north, got a place on the beach in south of Georgia, and then drove up yesterday.
Wow, place on the beach. So, very fancy.
Yep.
Wow, everybody seems to be having more
fun.
You
got contributor money, man.
Yeah, no, I guess
that is true. That was actually the memo to all the media, is to have more fun than Sam Cedar.
Well, that's not hard to do. I basically just, I'm not even going to go into what my Labor Day weekend was. I spent, I think, about 14 hours trying to get Mila to take a shower at one point. I think that was basically just like a series of punishments on top of punishments. But hey, be that as it may. So, Tina, your thoughts. What's the feel there? Are people enthused? Is there some skepticism? I mean, these are the party faithful. What's going on?
Well, I think the RNC was post-apocalyptic. If Republicans were in charge, everything would look like downtown Tampa with roving gangs of militarized policemen and their tanks trying to make sure that no one can walk anywhere. Everything was partitioned off so you couldn't do anything. There was no center. There were, a lot of the people who, the attendees, the delegates were angry and kind of still bitter from their primary process that was long and kind of and really divided. And then, of course, there was the drama with the Ron Paul people. Now you have Charlotte, which is basically how I would describe pre-apocalyptic. Yesterday was a street fair, Carolina Fest. You had people, James Taylor performed.
Jeff
Bridges
was performing. I'll
tell you something.
Nothing foretells the apocalypse more than a James Taylor concert.
That is true. He is the fourth horseman. And there were people dancing and whatever. I mean, it's a party, and the crowd here is definitely happy. The delegates, I was on a delegate shuttle bus this morning, and these are kind of like, they call themselves the cheerleaders of the party because they know their vote no longer means anything, but it's just kind of symbolic. But they're having a fantastic time. People like their nominee, unlike the Republicans. And I'm looking forward to the speeches today, particularly to Kamala Harris, who had, I forget exactly how much money that Karl Rove spent to try and keep her from being the state attorney general in California. But she's speaking this afternoon, and it should be really exciting. She's been compared to Barack Obama in a couple of ways.
Wow. So there's no, you're not seeing any type of enthusiasm gap there?
No, not here. Not here. There was definitely that on the Republican side, but
really?
the Democrats seem to be quite, they're pretty, and also the weird thing is you walk around and you're like, okay, well, these are the people that the Republicans are trying to take their country back from, which means that there are, it looks like America. Here, there are, let me see, Latinos, there's black people, there's women that are not wives or mothers. There's homosexuals walking around openly holding hands. I mean, it's, everything that scares Republicans.
They're letting all these people into the convention?
They are letting all these people in. No, and they're actually walking around Charlotte openly, too, which is, I know.
It's crazy.
Fifth Horseman. I don't know. Right, it is. But it's such a stark contrast in mood and crowd. The delegates, of course, the reaction shots when you watch the speeches on television were of all white people. And it was like maybe 95% white people, mostly male. And then the speeches were trying to contrast that, trying to show the diversity of the Republican Party that didn't really exist. Well, the Democratic Party actually has diversity. In thoughts and views. I mean, there are people who disagree, but it's what the Republicans used to call their big tent now is really what the Democrats have.
Interesting. And have you come across any protests? Have you heard, I mean, to hear you talk, it sounds like it's there's no enthusiasm gap. There's no dissent. You're like a Democratic apparatchik.
There are protests. There was a protest, I believe, on Monday. There was one on Sunday with 1,000 protesters, roughly, from reports. I wasn't there in front of the Bank of America building because Charlotte is a hub for Bank of America. And so there was a protest here, and, you know, there are probably more protesters here by the numbers of the reports we're getting than there were at the RNC. The RNC had about 300. I did the math, and like we talked about last week, it was about 13 police officers per protester at the RNC. Here there's about maybe around 1,000, but they're really they've been pretty organized. I think there's a Planned Parenthood rally going on right now, but of course that's not protesting against what's going on inside the convention hall.
Have you heard anything about, I've heard that rain may force the final night plans for President Obama to speak at the Bank of America Stadium indoors. Have you heard anything about that? Have you heard any reaction to that?
I have not, but I was in 2008, I was at a rally in downtown Cleveland where it was comparable in size to the crowd that JFK got. So it was about 80,000 people that showed up to listen to the then candidate Obama. And it was in the book Game Change, because as soon as he mentioned Karl Rove's I think he mentioned Dick Cheney, and then it started raining and no one moved. Everyone stayed there. I mean, there have been tons of pictures of Barack Obama speaking when it was pouring down rain, and even more of people standing out in really horrid conditions to listen to now President Obama speak. So I haven't heard those reports. I'm sure it'll still go ahead. People are really excited about that speech.
Yeah, but I mean, what I've heard is that the campaign sort of wouldn't mind actually avoiding it, because it may have sounded like a good idea at the time, but there's a little bit more anti-bank sentiment that has had to been acknowledged.
Oh,
I think
yeah,
also,
the optics of that are ridiculous.
Yeah, ridiculous.
The optics of that are ridiculous. And we should, really the naming rights should have, it was a trend that should really be destroyed. I mean, it's disgusting that we call it the Staples Center, and there's all these other big venues that are named after products. I think that's because it means, you're branding a publicly funded venue with a corporation, which is stupid.
Is anybody going to protest Rahm Emanuel speaking tonight? Anybody going to protest his speaking?
Not that I've heard of, but that doesn't mean it's not happening.
Right. So what else have you observed down there? Is there what else have you seen? Anything yet?
Yeah, well, not really. I mean, it hasn't started officially. We've just got here, got our credentials, and we're finally in the filing room. Everything's kind of spread out. Apparently, North Carolinians don't put sauce on what they call barbecue, which is sacrilege. I don't know how they can. It's no self-respecting human being would call that barbecue, but whatever. Everyone's looking forward to the kickoff, which is now in 4 hours.
And give me a sense: is there a meaningful difference in the way that these are organized? Are you finding this to be? The old canard is that the Democrats aren't as efficient as the Republicans. What was your sense?
Well, I feel like the RNC gave up a lot of their freedom for security, and I feel like there is less security here and definitely more freedom. So I think that, the word you used was canard. I think that is accurate. But I will say that I did see a sign pointing downward to media services to two escalators that were only going up.
Wait a second. Are you telling me there's more freedom at the Democratic convention than the Republican convention?
Yeah. No. Yes. No one has.
Hold on. This is breaking news.
No one has.
Hold on for a second.
Gina Dupuis reporting: more freedom, at the Democratic convention as opposed to the Republican convention. More on this as it develops.
No one has searched me yet, Sam.
Really?
I've been here for now 48 hours. No one has searched my bag once.
Wow.
And that happened, like, it felt like every other second someone wanted to search inside my bag and accost me in some way. Like, I've had no, you know, I've had, the only time I've had to speak with a police officer is to ask them where the convention hall was.
Wow.
I haven't seen any automatic weapons with in police officers' hands yet. It's definitely a different vibe. And, you know, it's not just Charlotte where people are friendlier. It's a completely different organization.
Interesting. Well,
it's a stark, stark contrast.
Tina,
I was not expecting that. I was expecting the DNC to be just as militarized as the RNC, but that is not true.
Wow, there you go. Tina Dupuy, live from Charlotte. Good luck there. What parties are you going to? Any good ones?
I was at the Politico one last night. Their food was about as mediocre as their reporting. Hello. I think I'm going to hit a couple tonight, Wonkette, and there's some other ones I'm going to crash. People for the American Way, I think, is tomorrow.
Yeah. All right.
But if you hear anything good, let me know.
I hear good things are happening at the HuffPo Spa.
Oh, yes. Where the masseuses work for free.
That's right.
All the people who work there are not paid.
Seriously?
That is true, yeah.
Or is that a joke? Wow.
That is not a joke. No, I would not joke about such a thing. Everyone, they have you can do makeup touches and get massages and facials and yoga classes, and every single person who works there is working for free as a volunteer.
What? Why?
Because, you know, I don't know, media exposure, there for the experience. I mean, the same thing that the bloggers get told.
Mm, great.
And this would be a good time to plug thecontributor.com, and we pay bloggers, at least revenue share with bloggers.
That's right.
We believe that people actually get paid for. Soon.
What's so funny about that?
Yeah, because we use stuff all the time because it's fantastic. We actually pay bloggers. Because we find that to be a progressive value.
Charge.
As in,
hello?
I'm going to send you a receipt. I mean, a bill. Where's our money?
Yeah, right? Right?
No, yeah, right.
Coming.
What do you mean?
It'll go towards your rent for that gigantic studio you have.
Right. Well, speaking of the rent, like when the guy calls up, when the landlord calls up and says, yeah, you owe us for rent. I'm like, yeah, right? All right, Tina, I guess we'll talk more about this later. Hello?
Yeah, email me, Sam.
Yeah,
hello? Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, things are getting a little uncomfortable. All right. Well, Tina, it is...
For you, not me.
The contributor.com.
Thanks, Sam.
All right, thanks, Tina. We'll talk to you later. All right, folks.
Bye.
We're going to take another quick break, and when we come back... We're going to talk to John Neffel of the podcast Radio Dispatch, who is, I believe he's on the streets of Charlotte. Give us a sense of what's going on in terms of the protests at the DNC. We'll be right back after this. We are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report on the phone. John Neffel, I guess one of the two hosts of Radio Dispatch, which you can find at theradiodispatch.com. We have a link at majority.fm. John, thanks for joining us today.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So where are you now? Hopefully you're in Charlotte, but whereabouts?
Right now, I and a couple of other journalists are walking towards the sort of center of the city, hoping to meet up with the Bradley Manning Solidarity March that is in progress right now.
So give me a sense of what protests you've been seeing. There are a lot of protesters there. My understanding is that more people have shown up than out in front of the RNC. I'm just curious as to what's happening and what you've heard is being planned.
Yeah, it seems like the turnout here is significantly bigger than the RNC. I wasn't in Tampa, but activists that I've spoken with over the past day have said that the scene here is a lot more vibrant. There are actions planned throughout the day. There's a Planned Parenthood support action happening. There's an anti-capitalist march happening tonight. And last night, we actually caught the tail end of a march that was just sort of winding its way through the streets of Charlotte. And, you know, there were, I'd say, maybe around 100 marchers or so. And when we returned to the park where the encampment has been for the past two nights, there were about 126 bicycle cops by my count. So it was more bicycle cops than I think I've ever seen at one time. And the bicycle cops alone far outnumbered the activists at that particular event.
Is there any explicit Occupy presence? Or, I mean, I imagine many of the activists are in some way involved with the different Occupy chapters around the country, as it were. But, I mean, is there any sort of explicit Occupy presence?
Yeah, I'd say that the encampment itself definitely feels like an Occupy camp. It's quite nice. There's a lot of nice tents set up. It's a really picturesque park. And there's a sort of food table set up, and it really looks like it could have been any park throughout, you know, the country that you would have seen last fall.
And so what tends to be, I mean, you're right now heading to a protest about Bradley Manning's detention, I guess. And what seems to be the sort of primary, is there a unified message or a primary message that we're hearing from the protesters at all?
Not that I've been able to discern so far. Some of the really fascinating events that I've attended so far, though, have been not exactly protest-related, but certainly activist-related and outside of sort of traditional electoral politics. For instance, there was an event that I went to yesterday called the Southern Workers Assembly. Uh-huh. That highlighted the massive lack of unions in the South, especially in North Carolina, which has a union density of 2%, and many other southern states have union densities of hovering at 5%. And so what the Southern Workers Assembly argued for, then there's more information at southernworker.org, is that there has to be a new massive labor movement that is not looking to the Democrats for any sort of leadership or for any sort of really support, any significant support. It's much more of a community sort of focused method, but also at the same time, they were arguing that it has to be broad enough so that unionization and organizing doesn't feel like it's a shop by shop sort of model of organizing. So that was fascinating. And it was explicit in the what the speakers were saying there, that they did not count on the Democrats for anything. And they followed that up by saying, certainly we can't count on the Republicans for anything. So that was really great. And then there was another event last night called the No Papers, No Fear Tour.
Going back to the labor organization. What was their perspective of the DNC being held in North Carolina? I'm just curious as to how that cuts. I mean, do they see that as a benefit in the sense that it gives them some type of milestone or watershed in which they can help their broader labor organization, or do they feel that is indicative of the Democrats not necessarily standing up for unions by actually holding the convention in a right to work state? What was their perspective on that? Did anybody touch on that?
Yeah, I think it was much, much more the second, that this is indicative of who the Democrats are as a party, and that to have the convention in Wall Street South, in the least unionized state in the country, should really be seen as showing unions and showing labor just what little regard the Democrats hold them in.
Right. Okay. Interesting. And so you were saying about the No Papers event. What is that?
Oh yeah. So there's a tour that's been happening called the No Papers, No Fear Tour. That's sort of also colloquially known as the UndocuBus. And it consists of undocumented immigrants who have gotten together on this bus and are going around to different cities and sort of stepping out of the shadows and making their immigration status known, and in fact often engaging in direct action that could result in arrests. Several of the activists, many of whom are Latinos, but not all of them. Many have been arrested protesting Sheriff Joe Arpaio, mm-hmm. and other sort of related issues. And what was really amazing about that is that you have people who really are in many ways at the margins of society, who think that Obama's immigration legacy still is yet to be decided. You know, on the one hand, there's the DREAM Act, which has been loudly and widely touted as this very important win for immigrants, which I think it certainly is. But on the other hand, you have his administration deporting record numbers of people. Right. And so this is just another example of people organizing and saying that knocking on doors for Obama isn't going to protect undocumented workers. And so you need to figure out ways of organizing that move beyond electoral politics and that move beyond saying, well, Obama is better than Romney.
Interesting. And on that accord, I noticed on Twitter that you had mentioned you went to a Young Democratic or Young Democrats event. And there were certain things that they were trying not to talk about. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I don't want to sound like I'm blaming the Young Democrats of America for the institutional failings of the Democratic Party. But it is telling that when you attend an event like this, there's no talk of foreign policy whatsoever. And there's certainly no talk of the drone strike in Yemen that just killed 13 civilians. And my sister and co-host on Radio Dispatch, Molly, asked several delegates what they would say to young political people who feel like there's no difference between the two parties when it comes to foreign policy. And they literally had nothing to say. Two of them just turned away from her, and the other one said, I don't know. And I think that is not at all surprising. And And it's just important to note that when you have young, passionate people who I think in many ways have their hearts in the right place, but they're also willing to support a president with a really toxic foreign policy that's that's in many ways no different from what you'd see in a Romney administration. That's incredibly, incredibly corrosive for the country. And also, I think that a lot of these people, you know, if we're sort of being blunt about it, if John McCain had been elected and began assassinating American citizens overseas, and if it was one of McCain's drones that had just killed 13 in Yemen, you're absolutely right. We would have heard about it. So there's just a complete blind spot. Well, I mean, I think a willful blind spot in the party, and that certainly was reflected in the event that I attended yesterday.
Yeah, I think the latter point is really actually more spot on. I mean, I'm not frankly convinced that there isn't a significant difference between, you know, and we can't tell, obviously, what Romney's foreign policy is just based upon who his advisors are. Relative to Obama's. That doesn't necessarily mean that Obama's is good. And certainly if McCain had been doing what Obama had done, we'd be hearing more about it. But, you know, I mean, that's, yeah. I mean, I don't know if I'm terribly surprised by that. Just because... You know, but it is interesting to note. They certainly would be far more aware of it, and the Democrats would make sure that these students were far more aware of it had it been John McCain's policy as opposed to President Obama's policy.
Right, absolutely. And with other sort of policies that enjoy broad bipartisan consensus, things like the mass incarceration and the racist drug war, no war on whistleblowers and just the things that don't get talked about because they're things that both parties agree to are just, they're not going to play any role in an event like that for very obvious reasons.
Right.
And that's why in many ways, the farther you get away from the convention, the more interesting and certainly the less conventional topics of conversation you're likely to hear.
So people can follow you at John Neffel on Twitter, and your program is theradiodispatch.com, and you're going to be out there on the streets for the next couple of days, correct?
Yeah, that's right. We will be out here tweeting and reporting on our show for the next couple of days.
How do the cops seem to be in terms of like treating the protesters?
You know, I haven't had too much of an opportunity to witness it firsthand, but last night it was just an example of such overwhelming numbers that there was no chance of any kind of confrontation from either side, which is kind of the model that New York City has adopted over the past 8 months. So yeah. Things were, you know, relatively cordial once you sort of accept the premise that 100 protesters warrant at least double that number of cops.
Wow. All right, John Neffel, thanks so much for joining us. I appreciate it.
My pleasure, Sam. Great talking to you.
You too. All right, folks. You know, I'm sure there are other programs that would give you such varied coverage, all different perspectives on the RNC. I don't know them by name, and they probably don't exist in this universe. What's that? What did I say? Well, RNC or the DNC. I mean, maybe that's the point. But if that show exists, I don't think it's actually, you can hear it with human ears. So please, if you can, become a member today. It is your support that keeps this program alive. And when you become a Majority Report member, then we also give you another 50 minutes worth of content, or 40 minutes. You know, today we went a little long on the free show. But it's only free if you don't pay for it. Let me put it that way. Tomorrow we're introducing a sponsor who's going to be sponsoring the show for a month, who's going to be sponsoring the better half of the program for a month. And it's very exciting. It's the first time we've had a sponsor like this. And, you know, the reason why we have so few sponsors on the show, frankly, is because, you know, Audible.com, I sort of an apolitical outfit as far as I can tell. But, you know, I think it's interesting product. I like books on tapes. But I also like to promote companies who I think are sort of progressive in nature and who share our politics. And that doesn't necessarily mean that I have to do anything political. So we've got one such company. We're going to announce it tomorrow. And they have this idea to help build the show, not just to sort of, this is a platform for them to advertise, but to actually, they had a great idea on how to build the show, which hopefully will be a great model for us going forward. We will talk about that tomorrow. And tomorrow on the program, I'm not sure who we're going to have, but we'll have some more guests, and it'll be fun. So if you can become a member, please do. Don't forget that if you do buy Amazon junk, you buy it through our link at majority.fm, support the show. We get a kickback. You click on the link, bookmark it, just call it Amazon on your bookmark bar. You will never know the difference. But we will notice all the difference in the world. Not so much, you know, and maybe in a very, very small, narrow world, we will know the difference. But it will, there'll be a difference. It'll help. And also, of course, justcoffee.coop, fair trade, organic coffee, tea, and chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get a 10% discount. You can also get the Majority Report blend. Give us a review on iTunes if you have it. That helps the show. DonateYourAccount.com if you haven't already. Spread the word. That helps the show. All right, folks. See you in the better half. You can call me at 646-257-3920, 646-257-3920. I will also take your IMs and also talk about this story. No charges for the CIA's. Basically, it's all in our past. We've managed to turn the page. Don't you feel better now? And we'll check in on Eric Schneiderman to see how he's doing in his pursuit of the malefactors. Is that the right word? Of the banks. We'll be right back after this.